This is the RightsCast Network at rightscast.net. Your spine tingles and your senses teem. With every passing word, you can feel it. The big scare is just around the corner. As readers, we know how we feel when reading horror, but how do we go about writing it? Hey there, I'm author, editor, and RightsCast Network founder R.R. Campbell, and welcome to episode 60 of your listener-supported R.R. Campbell RightsCast here on the RightsCast Network. This episode's guest is Michael G. Williams, an author of horror who will walk us through what inspired him to write in this genre, how he approaches the horrifying in his own work, and how we as writers can do the same. For the unfamiliar, Michael G. Williams writes wry horror, urban fantasy, and science fiction. Stories of monsters, macabre humor, and subverted expectations. He's the author of a number of titles for Falstaff Books, including Perishables, Tooth and Nail, Deal with the Devil, Attempted Immortality, and Nobody Gets Out Alive. That's just a sampling of what Michael has written, so to learn more, you can head to michaelgwilliams-author.com. All right, let's get into my interview of Michael G. Williams. Stay tuned afterward for updates on what you can expect next from the RightsCast Network. And thanks, as always, for listening. Well, thank you very much, Michael G. Williams, for joining me here on this episode of the R.R. Campbell RightsCast here on the RightsCast Network.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's really a great pleasure to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about this topic because it's one that hasn't been covered really in any regard yet on any of the shows on the RightsCast Network, and that is because we are talking about horror today, and we may as well start here with me asking you, what got you started writing horror, and do you find other horror authors with whom you've spoken have taken similar journeys to your own?
So, I grew up in the mountains of Western North Carolina, the Appalachian Mountains. And I grew up in a pretty remote part of those mountains and surrounded by family who had, let's just say the gene pool was pretty shallow. We had been there for a very long time. And I was surrounded by people who were engaged in that sort of Appalachian tradition of storytelling. A lot of the stories that were told when I was a kid, though, were not what one might imagine to be like traditional stories that you would tell a child. For instance, I remember one time we had a family dinner specifically so that my grandmother's sisters could have dinner with us and tell stories from when they were all children together. And every story boiled down to supernatural horror, like the story of the time that their father, who was a minister, a thunderstorm happened while he was preaching, and he believed that it was the devil attacking the church, and so he had everybody like riled up and running around. The time that she got into the moonshine that was being made on the farm and then had like all these really intense visions of stuff happening that was impossible. You know, when she was describing to us, I'm like in eighth grade when this happened, she's describing to us laying on her back in the cellar, rolling around, watching these visions of all the cats that lived in their barn, like crawling on the ceiling of their cellar and things like that. So we were exposed to a lot of really weird stuff like that. And between the combination of that being the sort of stories that we were told as kids, and also it was very built into the religious views of my parents and of the community that I was in, they had a very active and lively view of metaphysics and really did believe that we were constantly under supernatural attack and that the only defense against that was other supernatural forces. So I was constantly drenched in that kind of stuff and really having it modeled for me that the way that you made your mark on others was by telling stories. And so that's kind of what got me started. In terms of have I met other writers who have the same sort of journey, it's funny, every other horror writer I know who is Southern has basically the same story to some degree or another. Every other horror writer that I know who is not Southern does not. They have something like, you know, well, I really loved the movies, or I read a lot of EC Comics as a kid, or something like that. They, you know, sort of had those stories imported into their lives. But for those of us who grew up in the rural South, I think that being a horror writer comes very naturally.
Yeah, it almost sounds like you have it in your blood, so to speak.
Yeah, I think it's probably the only part of my heritage that I want to retain.
Well, it's good to have a sense of humor about it, I suppose, too. It's nice to know that we can laugh in between these frightening moments that we get in something like horror as well. Well, very good. I'm curious to know now what advice you might have for writers who are interested in writing horror. Where is it that they can start?
I think it's really important to ask yourself a couple of questions before you get started. And those are, one, the first one being, like, what scares you? Like, I had to really sit down and think, okay, what is it that scares me? And the horror fiction, regardless of medium, that I have enjoyed, once I started really trying to pull it apart and think about, like, what part of that was it that scared me? You know, was it, whether it's the movie Alien or whether it's the novel Dracula or anything like that, like, what were the things that were in common across those stories, and what were the things in those stories that I remember really provoked a reaction when I first encountered them as a kid? And so you have to really start picking apart, like, what is it that scares you? And then you have to start thinking about, okay, now what is a new way that I can think about that? Coming, in my case, I try to think about it in terms of, like, coming from my own experience. If I were to encounter this in my own experience, in what form would it scare me the most? For instance, one of the things that scares me in Alien is that sense of, like, Ripley, you figure out so fast that Ripley is the only person on the crew who is going to take this seriously and cope with it in any constructive way. And that doesn't sound terribly scary, but, like, I'm a very problem solver, you know, tangible results focused person, and so the idea of being the only person in a bad situation who can do anything about it and there is no one to help me is very scary. And so the very first horror novel I wrote was about a vampire who was at a neighborhood potluck when a very small zombie apocalypse breaks out in their neighborhood, and he very quickly realizes he is the only person there who stands a chance. And to me, that's the scary thing in that novel, is that sense of being the only capable person in the scenario. So you have to, like, really ask yourself, what is it that scares you? And then you have to think about, like, in what situation would I experience that in a way that would terrify me in my own life? And again, that situation, I live in a neighborhood in the suburbs where some of my neighbors are really great, and I really like them, and some of my neighbors really do not like me. And, you know, we just keep our distance from each other, and that's fine. And then I think about, what if we were stuck in a really bad situation together? Would I, like, how would I handle the moral choice of, do I help these people who I know hate me, or do I not help these people to get back at them and then feel guilty for it later? And so that was sort of the situation that I wanted to put that character in that novel.
Yeah, it really sounds like at the core of all of this, we're talking about knowing yourself. And it almost kind of harkens to me back to that general axiom about writing in general, which is to write what you know. You know, write what you're familiar with, write what scares you, write what motivates you. So it seems that in this way, there's really a lot of crossover between writing in a genre like horror, as there might be in writing even just contemporary fiction, for example.
Yeah, you know, I mean, like, write what you know is one of those pieces of advice that I try to actually shoot down every time I encounter it, because I think that speculative fiction genres really demand that we, like, rise to the occasion of thinking outside of our own experience and thinking about ways to make, you know, both protagonists and antagonists interesting, and ways to make them seem believable and understandable, and to get outside of our own experience. You know, I don't have many personal experiences that are reflected in my horror writing, but I do think it's really, and a lot of the characters in my horror writing have identities that are other than mine, and experiences that are other than mine, perspectives that are other than mine, and especially motivations that are other than mine. And I think it's really important the writers stretch their legs and, like, get outside of their own heads in that way. But at the same time, like, you do have to look to, like, what factors in a story would you as a reader find interesting and engaging? What parts of your own life are you able to sort of, like, take that seed and blow up into something totally different and present as a unique experience that, you know, overlaps with your own life but isn't necessarily only your own life.
Hey, did you know the RightsCast Network is listener-supported? That's right, listeners just like you choose to support our programming financially through contributions of $1, $2, or $3 per episode or per month. In exchange for their support, RightsCast Network patrons can receive awesome rewards, including early, ad-free access to every episode of our programming, RightsCast Network swag, discounts on my editing services, shoutouts in our shows, and more. Not only that, but the contributions of RightsCast Network patrons have us painfully close to unlocking a fourth podcast every month. Sound like something you're interested in? Help us bring you more content every month by visiting patreon.com/rightscast and becoming a supporter today. That's patreon.com/rightscast. Thanks for listening. Yeah, and let's talk maybe now about the idea of the experience of the stories themselves. Because one thing that I could see myself struggling with if I were trying to write a horror is finding that balance between building suspense and then when it is that we decide to capitalize on the suspense that we have built up. So what advice might you have for writers who are trying to strike that balance between building suspense and then capitalizing on that in the more horrifying moments of any given story?
You know, this will start in a weird place, but I promise it'll come back to an actual answer. There is one of my favorite scenes in the TV show Arrested Development is when their mother, Lucille, has found out that the kids have been talking to each other about the ways that she can be emotionally manipulative. And one of them has said she gets off on withholding. And then later in the show, she presents that person with a candy bar and says, "Do you want this candy bar?" And they say, "Yes." And then she, like, yanks it back and says, "Look at me, getting off." And I kind of feel like that's the game we have to play as writers. We have to learn how to tease the reader and then also when to shock the reader. Horror and comedy both. And whenever I write horror, there's at least a little comedy in it because horror is almost always hilarious on some level. And any good horror movie or novel or story or comic book or whatever will have moments of levity in them because both horror and comedy are based on the concept of subverted expectation. In a horror story, you want to shock, and shocking means that you cannot deliver to someone exactly what they expect. And you want to build suspense, but you don't want to have it all pay off too early. And so you have to build an expectation that something is about to happen and then have it not. And then you have to create a sense of okay, peace and calm and maybe everything is safe, and then have something burst into the scene to disrupt that sense of safety. You constantly have to create an expectation and then immediately subvert it. And I don't mean just jerking people back and forth. I mean being very aware of sort of the story beats that you're hitting, and are you creating in the reader a sense that the characters now might have things under control, and then you're demonstrating that they don't? Or are you demonstrating to the reader that the characters wrongly think that they have things under control, and then demonstrating that things actually are not as bad as they think they are, things like that. So you have to really finesse creating those moments when the reader expects something bad to happen and then flipping that, and creating moments when the reader does not think anything bad is left that can happen, and having something worse happen.
Who would have thought that Arrested Development could help inform how we write horror?
Right. But yeah, that's the thing. You look at shows like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, or there are, or I don't know, Love at First Bite, the old movie, the old spoof Dracula movie. Those movies, those TV shows, things like that, they all have moments of levity. They all have moments of real funniness, real humor. And a lot of times that humor is used to make the reader think that the moment of crisis has passed. And then, boom, it's really bad, actually. And there's a lot of, using those to play off of each other and to seesaw the reader's expectation or the viewer's expectation.
And thinking now about this moment of crisis, you know, of course, our characters are going to encounter those as they go on their own journey. But we as writers, we have plenty of our own challenges, too. So I'm curious to know what you see as the biggest challenge you personally encounter when writing horror. And then maybe lay out for us, how do you overcome that? And is that translatable to other writers, do you think?
So I think I have two big problems. One is that I love my characters too much. And so it is entirely possible that a reader will decide that nothing bad is going to happen to anybody in any of my books because I like them so much that I'm not going to kill them off. And in fact, for somebody who has been described as a horror writer, I have killed very few characters. And almost all of those who have died nobly. But so you got to learn how to, like, have consequences appear in the story and let those consequences be meaningful enough for the reader to still feel that tension of wondering what's going to happen next. And at the same time, you have to not go overboard. It would be easy for me to, like, set up a character that I don't care about and then just knock them off. And I think readers are very aware of when that happens and see that as kind of a cheap shot. When I'm a reader, I see that as a cheap shot. And so you have to, like, learn how to build enough empathy between the reader and the characters and keep the characters in enough significant and real danger to let the readers feel like it is possible that bad things will happen. So that's a real challenge for me. And I think that I think that's probably a challenge for everybody. I have killed off characters that I really loved and then decided later that what I needed to do was bring them back as a ghost because I liked the character too much. And then had people say, well, that's not really a consequence. And I'm like, really? Have you ever lived without a body? That's a consequence.
I would say that's a consequence. Yeah.
That's a consequence. The other thing that I have real trouble with as a writer is that I am always convinced that nothing in my story is surprising because I always knew what was going to happen. You have to be able to, like, step outside of the experience of the story you're writing and say, more objectively, will someone who does not know what's going to happen in the next chapter read this and think, gosh, I wonder what's going to happen next? And I'm not good at that. I am really not good at that. My editor at Falstaff Books, Aaron Penn, who is amazing, has been very helpful with me in terms of, like, pointing out the points where I have done a really good job of keeping the mystery and points where I have not, and I need to, like, build a little more mystery into it, because I'm just not good at spotting the distinction. It's very difficult for me to read the story with fresh eyes. If I'm going to edit something myself, I have to, like, write it, and then I have to leave it alone for, like, a year so that I will forget enough of it that I can come back and read it and not know exactly what was going to happen from memory.
And I'm really glad you mentioned that you have an editor who is really great at helping you identify these places and opportunities where you might need to, you know, differently frame the context that's being given on the page so we can either build more suspense or create greater empathy between a particular character and the reader, for example. And that's something that I often tell those who I'm working with or I'm in workshops with. You know, it's really great to rely on our editors if we have them, or also our beta readers or our critique partners to really help us get outside of the story and to get that input from people who it's all going to be a surprise for them the first time through. Because like you said, as the author, we're always in a position where if we know what's happened because we've written it, well, we've got dramatic irony throughout. We can't view it in the same lens that it can be viewed from the perspective of someone who has no familiarity whatsoever. So I'm really glad you mentioned the use of an editor. And I'd say for listeners, you know, if you're not in a position to hire an editor or you don't have one yourself, this is where using that network of beta readers and critique partners can really be helpful.
Yeah, you know, if nothing else, like, you know, find a writer's group online or find a meetup for writers in your area or something like that. I don't know. Go to conventions and ask if people want to read a story for free in order to get to be a beta reader. It's very difficult to sometimes to, like, know where to look for that, but it's so important to get those fresh eyes on a story.
And we're talking a little bit about this already in terms of resources for helping one another improve, for helping other writers improve, and for getting some good perspective on our writing in general. And that has me thinking, you know, wondering now about Are there any good writerly resources that you personally are familiar with that focus on horror or that are made for horror writers specifically?
With that, let's pause for a moment for a brief word from, well, me. Your book, Our Airwaves, Yes, It's True, Anything is Possible When You Advertise with the RightsCast Network. Hey there, I'm R.R. Campbell, RightsCast Network founder, and I'm here to let you know that you can now advertise your book, podcast, editing services, whatever creative endeavor, you can advertise it here on the RightsCast Network. Not only that, but you can advertise with us for less than a dollar a month, yes. We offer packages for as little as less than a dollar a month. So get your book, your editing services, podcast, what have you, introduced to hundreds of new listeners by advertising with us today at rightscast.net/advertise or email me at rightscast@gmail.com and we can get started. Let's make it happen for you and your creative endeavors. That's your book, Our Airwaves, rightscast.net/advertise.
Really have anything that's specific to horror writers, but there are a couple of things that I do recommend. One is, and this isn't available to everybody, but if it is available to you, then you should take advantage of it. Going to fandom conventions and talking to small ones specifically, and talking to other writers, you know, meeting other writers, going to other writers' readings and listening to them read the story the way that they want it to be heard in your head. That's a really important and constructive educational experience. It lets you see how other writers operate. It lets you see firsthand, like, what it is they're trying to achieve in their story. A lot of times, you know, Joss Whedon described this, his response to how do you get ideas and how do you, like, stay productive was fill the tanks. And, you know, and I think that's a really important take on it is, to seek opportunities to work with other writers, talk to other writers, listen to other writers talk about what they do, and hear other writers read so that you can, you know, be constantly like ingesting more of how other people do it. Because the only way that we're going to get good at writing ourselves is to read or otherwise consume a ton of very wide, broad spectrum of other people's work to see what it is that we like and what is it that works for us as a reader and how can we work to like reproduce that in our own work. Not like by, you know, plagiarizing it, but by like learning those techniques and figuring out ways to sort of exercise that in our own work. The other thing that I think is probably available to just about everybody, there's a book called Hamlet's Hit Points. And it's not specific to horror, but it is about story beats and how to analyze a story in that sense of like understanding what kind of beats are appropriate and what the pacing should be and how different specific well-known stories use specific beats in specific ways to achieve their storytelling goals. And so like after the author describes different kinds of beats and how they might be used, then they analyze three big stories, one of which is Star Wars Episode 4, you know, and one of which is Hamlet. And they take you through those stories saying scene by scene, moment by moment, this is the kind of beat that they're looking for here, this is the kind of beat that they're looking for there, in order to help build like a really technical understanding of the structure of those stories and the ways that those stories were very specifically created to achieve, you know, explicit emotional goals.
It sounds like to some extent it's all coming back to trying to train ourselves to read like a writer might read, so that you're putting Absolutely. Yourself in a position to really break down what's on that page. And it sounds like something like Hamlet's Hit Points might be a really great roadmap to help getting people to start thinking about how they might like to approach what it is that they're reading in a very particular and deliberate way. And I'll throw this out there as another resource for listeners who are tuning into this particular episode. Back on RightsCast episode 54, we did an episode on this, in fact, with author Meg Gertner. That one is called Reading Like a Writer. And we spend a half hour talking about different ways to approach the page, the value that comes from doing this exact thing. So I'm really glad that you brought this up, because we do have, it's right over at rightscast.net/podcasts/RightsCast, or, you know, of course, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever. You can listen to RightsCast episode 54 with with Meg, and we do a full half hour on that very topic. So again, really glad that you mentioned that here.
Yeah, it's just, it's so important. You know, I think a really important experience for some people is buy like a cheap throwaway paperback copy of one of your favorite novels and just sit down with like a ballpoint pen or a highlighter or something and go through and like mark every time on the page that you get goosebumps or that you think, oh yeah, that's what I love in this story, and start like just at that level, like begin to start recognizing what is it in a story that engages you as a reader, and that's what you're going to be looking to try to capitalize on as a writer.
All very good advice there. So we certainly have plenty of takeaways, both from that response as well as throughout this conversation. So before I let you go, Michael, do you have anything on the horizon here, anything you'd like to plug or promote or let listeners know about?
Sure. So this is a really big year for me publishing-wise. Falstaff Books is publishing 3, and possibly before the year's over, 4, we'll see, books by me. The first one is already out. It's called A Fall in Autumn, and that one is a sci-fi noir detective story set in the far future with some like weird supernatural and religious elements to it. So that one is a lot of fun. Then actually the day yesterday, given the date that this episode will be published, the last book in my Withrow Chronicles series has been published. That's a 5-book series that started out as being about vampires in the suburbs and then grew over time to be more of an urban fantasy and vampires in the suburbs series. It's all based here in North Carolina. And in each one, I take the vampire genre and try to mash it up with some other genre. So one of them is vampires and zombies. One of them is vampires and rednecks. One of them is vampires and superheroes, supervillains. And that 5-book story, that 5-book series completes with Nobody Gets Out Alive, which is the 5th and final book in that series. And then later this year, but not a whole lot, I'm going to have the first in a new urban fantasy time travel horror series called Servant Sovereign. That's the name of the series. The first book will be called Through the Doors of Oblivion. And in that one, modern-day witches in San Francisco have summoned up the spirit of one of San Francisco's greatest eccentrics in order to have that person help them fight a great supernatural threat to the city. So they summon up Emperor Norton, if you're familiar with him. He was a real person in history and a really fascinating human being. And modern-day witches against demons in San Francisco is what that one's about.
Certainly sounds like you've got a lot on your plate there. So congratulations on all of that success. And I'll ask one last thing here. Is there a website or a place online that listeners can find you if they want to learn more about any of this?
Sure. They can look me up on my website at michaelgwilliams-author.com, or they can subscribe to my monthly microfiction mailing list, which has an ongoing short story exclusive to that list, at bit.ly/mgwnewsletter, or they can find me on Facebook at Michael G. Williams Author. That's uppercase M, uppercase G, uppercase W, and uppercase A.
Very good. We've got plenty of places to find you online. Congratulations again on all of your success, and thank you so much for joining me for this episode.
Hey, thanks for having me. This has been so much fun.
And there you have it, another interview in the books. Thanks to Michael G. Williams for taking the time to speak with me, and thanks to you, dear listeners, for tuning in. Of course, I owe a great deal of thanks to the listeners who also support our programming through financial contributions at patreon.com/rightscast. In exchange for their support, our patrons can receive early, ad-free access to every episode of our programming, Rightscast Network swag, discounts on my editing services, and more. Folks like Kristen Oakley and the amazing Laura Hazen support us at $3 per episode, so they get this additional thank you by name in every Rightscast Network episode. So thanks to both of you for your support. If you'd like to get in on these great patron rewards and help us unlock a 4th podcast every month, you can subscribe today at patreon.com/rightscast. That's patreon.com/rightscast. Coming up next on the Rightscast Network, we have an episode featuring Madeline D'Est of the Right Through the Roof podcast. Madeline will join me to discuss strategies for distilling writing advice, and her episode will debut on July 5th, 2019. Don't miss it. Until then, you can find the WritesCast Network online at WritesCast.net or as WritesCast on Twitter. I'm on Twitter at IamRRCampbell, and you can learn more about my books and editing services at RRCampbellWrites.com. Thanks for listening. Until next time, this is R.R. Campbell signing off. Write on and write well. This is the WritesCast Network at WritesCast.net.